Welcome to the Happiness Squad podcast, your weekly dose of practical tips and inspiration to help you operate at your fullest potential, integrating the science of flourishing into how you live, work, and lead. I'm your host, Ashish Kothari, the founder and CEO of Happiness Squad and author of the best-selling book, Hardwired for Happiness. I will be your personal guide on your journey to explore the many facets of happiness, well-being, and flourishing, from personal growth to building more positive environments at work. In each episode, we will share powerful insight, tips, and stories from our guests who are leading experts, company executives, and flourishing solution providers that you can implement right away to make happiness your competitive edge. Whether you're looking to overcome life's challenges, to go from good to great, or to enhance your team's performance through flourishing, this podcast is the place for you to find more joy, health, love, and meaning in everything you do. Join us every week as we rewire for happiness together. Welcome to yet another episode of the Happiness Squad podcast, where we share strategies to help make flourishing and happiness your competitive edge. Today, we are honored to host Dr. Alphonsus Oboyuana, who is the founder and CEO of the Triple H Project, an entity that trains happiness coaches around the world. Dr. Oboyuana has dedicated over three decades to researching human hope and happiness and shares his insights in his new book entitled The Happiness Formula. His groundbreaking work, captured in the Triple H equation, which is at the heart of this book, has helped countless individuals and organizations, including Coca-Cola and General Motors, harness the power of hope in fostering happiness. In today's episode, Dr. Oboyuana unpacks the five sources of human hope, as well as the five compelling desires, or hungers as he calls them, that all humans are born with. What's beautiful about his work, he ties them together in a really innovative, simple-to-use happiness formula that can help anyone calculate not only their own personal happiness index, but specifically identify the actions that they need to take on both sides of the equation, increasing hope and lowering our hungers in order to improve their happiness. Stay tuned for a truly transformative conversation that bridges the gap between rich scientific research and practical wisdom, offering actionable steps for you to elevate your happiness quotient. My dear friend, it is so lovely to have you on our podcast the week that your book, The Happiness Formula, launches. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ashish.
You know, we only met 2-3 weeks ago, but I had the good fortune of traveling with you in the bus to the summit.
Yes.
So friends, listeners, I met Alphonsus at the Gross Global Happiness Summit in Costa Rica. It's an amazing summit organized by the University of Peace in collaboration with the World Happiness Foundation, where about 150 of the top leaders in this piece of happiness and flourishing got together. And Alphonsus was one of those. And I was really so moved, so inspired by his journey. And I know you will too, because it's just amazing. He's a doctor. You know, he studied happiness in research all the way from his younger years. He'll tell that story. And now he's launching this book. We had such amazing conversations on our bus trips. We were sitting together. And he's just an amazing, amazing human being. And it's our pleasure to support him in launching his book and all the collaborations that we're going to do together. So my first question for you, Alphonsus, is share with our listeners how you decided, you know, so early in your career to start your research on human hope. You know, that was what really stayed with me, that it was your you were one of the first people to start researching hope in the medical profession, and how that eventually led to the development of the happiness formula. So share a little bit of your life journey, your explorations of hope, and where we are now.
All right, please. When I was in medical school in this country, that is in the U.S., in third year, you rotate through different departments.
Yes.
You rotate through pediatrics, through surgery, through psychiatry, physical therapy. And during my psychiatry rotation, I helped to take care of two patients who had just attempted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And that stayed with me. I was deeply moved and just transformed. And I was thinking, since the impression, the assumption was that hope is what is missing when people commit, attempt suicide, if we can find a way of measuring hope and see people who have low hope, then they can be helped very quickly and timely fashion before they start thinking of suicide. And my professors received the desire for me to study hope very, very well. And about a month or two after that, I actually got a national fellowship to study human hope.
How old were you and what year was it?
I think I was probably about, because I had been in graduate school, I was not the typical 24, 25-year-old starting medical school. So I was about maybe 29, 30, yeah.
And
because
what year was
I was
this?
In graduate school also. I studied biochemistry. And so I had gotten my master's degree in biochemistry. And so now I was studying medicine and also doing my PhD in biochemistry.
And what year was this, Alphonsus?
This was 1977. Fall 1977, right? Yes, yes.
So imagine that, dear friends. So it's 1977, there were not many people talking about hope or researching hope. So you've been kind of in this field, right, exploring this for now almost 50 years, close to 50 years.
Definitely.
So what were your findings when it came to hope? What did you find, Alphonsus?
What we wanted to do was to have an instrument, a questionnaire for determining a hope score. So the money was given to the dean, and it was a lot of money when you think about it those times. The money was not given to me, but anything I wanted to do, the dean's office in the medical school would allocate the money and channel it.
Yep.
So research was very, very tough because there was very little on it. Even psychologists were not interested in the subject of hope. They were disease-focused, okay, anxiety, depression. And so the first thing we did was to do a survey, a national survey, asking people, what does hope mean to you in one or two words only?
Yeah. And remember, friends, this was 20 years before positive psychology was born with Marty Seligman.
Exactly.
So the time that Alphonsus is talking about, psychologists were interested more in studying stress, anxiety, depression, as many are even today.
Exactly.
Other than the few, right, few who are actually looking at positive psychologists. So beautiful. So you did a survey on hope.
Yeah.
And what does it mean? And what did you find?
Exactly. That's how we found what hope meant to many, many people. Money, family, children, good job, a good home, a good future, and all of that. And we did additional survey to support that. But at the end, we found that there were five sources of human hope. And that is what we then decided to measure. The five
sources. What are those five sources?
Yes.
Yeah, what are those five sources?
Okay, the five sources of human hope are, number one, what we call intrinsic assets. That is your virtuous attributes, your ego strength, a signature strength,
mm-hmm.
things that make you you. That's your intrinsic assets.
I see.
Then human family assets, people that you know, family, friends, colleagues that love you and help you and give you empathy and sympathy and you deal with.
Uh-huh.
Then the third asset was economic assets, which means your sense of material sufficiency. Not so much how much you have in the bank, but how material sufficient you are.
Yeah. And so, your sense of it. And your sense of, do you feel you have enough or are you missing it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Beautiful.
And then the third thing was the educational assets. What you know, your curiosity, your intellect, your knowledge about your environment and your personal plight. And then the fifth one was spiritual assets. That is the benefits that you get from your spiritual orientation in terms of how you feel about your relationship with either God, Allah, Yahweh, or any omnipotent cosmic force or being.
Yeah.
So that is what we measure. And we came up with what we call the Hope Index Scale. And it became very popular with even Fortune 500 companies like Coca-Cola, General Motors, government entities like Veterans Administration, many universities in Europe, and inside and outside the United States, we're using it. Graduate students were using it for research. And it became very popular.
I love it, and I can see why. You know, there is so little, Alphonsus, that's possible. Yesterday, you know, we were celebrating Jane Goodall. It was her 90th birthday. And, you know, we were raising a toast together, me and Brad, who was on the board of the Jane Goodall Institute, you know, in her honor, and of an amazing life. And she talked so heavily. In fact, she wrote her last book was called Hope, and how she talked about, you know, how the world is losing hope. And how, and I love these five assets that you identified and then you created into an index. Because, you know, when, friends, we don't have hope, it is hard to take action. Without hope, you get into depression. Without hope, you know, suffering without hope becomes depression, which then can lead to suicide.
Yes.
But if we are suffering, but we have hope that we can, things can get better, we can move towards action.
Definitely.
And I love these five, right?
You,
I love these five.
You got it right on the head. That is what it is. Yeah.
I love these intrinsic assets. Do you know your strengths, who you are? It's about knowing, and can you use those strengths? Even in the hardest times, what strength do you have that you can use? Family. I love that. Like, who in your family, extended family, relationships, and I even expanded to the community.
You know,
who are the connections?
Life.
Right? Who is in your life, relational assets, right, that can actually help you and you can cultivate it. Economic, right? I love what you just said. It's not just how much you have in the bank. It's about how do you want what you have versus having something
your
else.
Your sense,
you know,
of material sufficiency.
Exactly. Do you feel what you have is enough? The
yes.
Fourth, I love education, curiosity, and intellect. Again, you can turn it into, can you build it if you don't have it? And the last is spiritual, which is, you know, belief in a higher purpose, higher being, a fundamental source
yes.
of connection. It doesn't matter what you call it.
Exactly. In fact, there are some people who are spiritual but not religious.
Yes.
It has to do with your sense of right and wrong, life and death, evil, good and evil, man and God, your feelings about those, that makes up your spirituality. And the benefits you get from that kind of orientation, those are your spiritual assets.
I love it. By the way, I don't know if you've read this, Alphonsus, and for our listeners, if you haven't, get a copy of this book, because there's so many, I think, and especially the younger generation who say they don't want anything to do with spirituality and, you know, Darwin's theory of how life emerged, and et cetera, et cetera. There's a book called The Awakened Brain. It's actually a book written by a neuroscientist and a researcher who actually looked at how the awakened brain, you know, those who practice spirituality have higher buffers against depression, higher buffers.
Definitely.
And they actually enjoy
Definitely.
A higher quality of life because the brain structures change.
Beautiful.
So it's really, really powerful.
Beautiful.
But let's go from the Hope Index to the Personal Happiness Index and your work now, Alphonsus,
All right.
around the happiness formula. So one, first describe what is the happiness formula.
The happiness formula is the title of the book. And I wrote the book for four reasons. Number one was to share my chance discovery of a very simple equation that makes it possible to determine happiness and quantify it, determine it subjectively and quantitatively, also assess it. Number two was to introduce the EDO questionnaire, a 5-minute tool with 12 items that can differentiate and identify languishing individuals, flourishing individuals, very happy individuals, very unhappy individuals, and unhappy individuals. The whole spectrum of the languishing at one end of the scale and flourishing at one end of the scale.
Got it.
So we can find your personal happiness index by you answering just 12 items in the questionnaire. And that is what this is about. So you know where you are in the spectrum. And it goes from 0.125 to 8.0. A lot of areas around there.
Alphonsus, can we do this together, you and I? And maybe as you ask the questions, we can have the listeners do it too and calculate their own score.
Definitely. It's all in the book. And I can give you some samples of it. I could give it to you or you can give it to your audience.
We just do the 12 questions together. You can ask me the 12 questions and I'll answer my score and you can score it. And then you can tell me.
All right. Do you want to do that now? Is that what you want
to do?
Let's
do it. If you're up for it, let's do it. Okay. Nothing like some spontaneous fun.
All right. Very good.
So we're going to do the 12 question Alphonsus's happiness index. Calculate my index, and I invite you to follow along, dear friends, and answer these questions for yourself too.
Exactly. Now, so we're going to read each question of the 12 statements. This is the actual question. Generally speaking, I am an optimist.
And I should answer on a scale from 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 or what's...
1 to 8.
1 to 8. 8 is very, very true. 1 is not true.
If it's not true at all, you can put 1 or 2.
Okay.
If it is somewhat true, you can put 3 or 4.
Okay.
If it is true, 5 or 6.
Okay.
If it's very true, 7 or 8.
Perfect.
Generally speaking, I am an optimist.
8.
Just whatever the answer you want to put there. I do believe I have something to offer to others in this life.
8.
The third one is, in the case of an emergency, I have someone I can count on.
8.
And the fourth one is, when I need answers, I'm usually successful finding them.
8.
Considering the resources available to me, I am more fortunate than many.
8.
And the sixth one is, when I think about my relationship with God, I feel reassured and less afraid.
8.
So you add all your points together.
Uh-huh.
And it can go from anywhere from 6 to 48.
Yep. So I'm at 48
on these. And that's your
hope
score. Now, doing the same thing for the next 6 questions, which means 1 or 2, if not true at all, and 7 or 8, if it's very true.
Sounds good.
Statement 7, I'm currently on a lot of stress. If it's somewhat, then 3, 4. If it's true, 5, 6. If it's very true, 7, 8. If not
3.
True at all, 1 or 2.
3.
Number 8, the next question is, I do not get the respect that I deserve.
No, I do not get 1.
I do not get the respect that I deserve.
I get a lot of respect, more respect than I deserve.
I have no trusted or intimate companion. That's the next question.
1. I'm blessed.
Lack of enough money is a constant worry of mine.
1.
The next one is, I have so many unanswered questions.
I have so many unanswered questions.
Unanswered questions. If it's somewhat
4.
True, 3 or 4. True, 5 or 6. Very true, 7 or 8. Not true at all, 1 or 2.
This would be a 4.
Then the last question is, I am worried about my future.
1.
And you add up all question and
that becomes 11.
11. So if you bring out your calculator.
Yep.
And divide 48 over 11. And make
4.36.
It up to 3 decimal places.
4.363.
And Ashish, I want to congratulate you. You are flourishing. You are in the flourishing range. Your score is definitely higher than mine. My score is 2.923. I'm in the... in zone A, like you are, but you are in the flourishing range.
Beautiful. I love the questions. I love how, you know, I thank you for sharing those with me because I love how holistic they are around the different aspects.
They are applicable anywhere to a millionaire living in a city of London or a fisherman living in a village in Kenya. It's applicable because we are measuring your hopes and your hungers.
Yeah.
And it's the ratio is your personal happiness index. So your personal happiness index, Ashish, is 4.363. And test retest reliability is 0.95.
Wow.
The alpha value for internal consistency of this questionnaire is 0.88. And the AVC, the CVRO, the continent validity ratio is 0.85, which means the instrument is doing what it's supposed to do.
Right.
It's measuring happiness, no question about it.
We hope you're enjoying this episode. If you'd like to start building habits and integrating the Hardwired for Happiness practices into your life, come check out Rewire, our program on the Happiness Squad website. Rewire contains 30 5-minute micro practices that can help you truly build habits for a happier, healthier life filled with more love and meaning. The program uses the science of habit formation and the power of community to support you in moving from knowing to doing to being. Now, back to the episode. I love it. And I love also that it's 12 questions. So it's very easily taken by everyone. It is, you know, in very simple language. Let's explore. We talked a little bit about hope and you highlighted those five drivers, those assets that drive hope. Talk to us a little bit about hunger, Alphonsus. And I still remember our conversation on the bus. So share your perspectives on hungers, what they are, what are the basic hungers, and how they contribute to unhappiness.
All right. I'd be glad to. First of all, hunger, as we define it, is a compelling desire. Not just hunger for food, compelling desire.
Hunger is compelling desire. Okay.
Yes, that's it. Okay. And there are five inborn hungers that we are born with. They are not learned. They are congenital.
Okay.
And we found this out by studying babies, right from the moment they come out of the womb in the delivery room. And we follow them through the nursery, 1 year old, 2 year old, 3 years old, involving grandparents and parents, older siblings, and nannies, babysitters, grandparents, pediatricians, and nurses.
Okay.
And then we found out that there are five inborn human hungers.
And what are they?
They are the following. First is the hunger for inclusion and acknowledgement.
Hunger for inclusion and acknowledgement.
And acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two is a hunger for intimacy and trusted companionship. Trusted companion. Intimacy and trusted companion. The third one is hunger for food and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth is hunger for information and answers.
Uh-huh.
And the fifth one is hunger for continuity and certainty. Let me tell you how we found this out, why we call this inborn. Because they are found in children and they are not taught. For example, the hunger for inclusion and acknowledgement. If you have been with kids, they want to be a part of it.
Yes.
All right. Mommy, mommy, they will not play with me. Daddy, they will not let me join. It's always, and the worst punishment in kindergarten is time out.
Yes.
When you put them out to sit out away from everybody else. Okay. It's not learned. It is congenital. And we have it all through our life. Even the worst punishment for prisoners is a solitary confinement.
Yes.
Okay. So it's all true. Now, the hunger for intimacy and trusted companion, even right from 6 months old of age, a baby would have a preferred companion. Usually the mother or an older sibling or a nanny or a grandparent. And if the baby is crying and it's passed from hand to hand until it gets to the person that the baby really wants to be with, and it stops crying then. And this is documented by pediatrician, by parents, you know. And you don't have to show children, you don't have to teach them how to clasp their hands around you for intimacy, all right? Then the hunger for food and comfort, that's the first demand, the first request babies make. In the delivery room, all babies are born unhappy. They are crying, they are kicking, they are screaming because they have just been removed from the womb where they were surrounded by warm water. Food was flowing through the umbilical cord nonstop and does not require any effort. And everything is quiet and soothing. And all of a sudden, without any notice, the baby is evicted from the uterus.
Yeah.
Okay. And how do we make them stop crying? We wipe them dry, cover them with a warm blanket, and give them milk, food, and comfort. And when they get to the nursery, if there are seven babies in the nursery, baby number four is crying. It's one of two things. Either he's hungry or he's wet.
Yes.
Okay. So food and comfort. Then when you come to information and answers, you know how many questions children ask. What is this, grandma? Why? Who is that? And information and answers, they are inborn hunger for information and answers. And so the fifth one is continuity and certainty. Babies, children, they love encore. Let's do it again, daddy. Tell me another story, grandma. It's on. And stories that end with everybody being happy forever after is what they love.
Yeah.
Continuity. And if you make promises to children and you don't keep them, they can be very, very unforgiving. Granddaddy, but you promised, they would say. And so these are the five inborn human hungers that children display, and they stay with us forever. And everything we do in life is in response to these five hungers. Nothing that we do that is not in response.
I really love these. And you know, what I love is how you've expanded hunger that is just associated with physical hunger that we know has lots of effects, right, on our development. But I love these other five hungers. In fact, you know, I'm sure you're familiar, Alphonsus, with this recent research that came out of Harvard, which looked at neglect in childhood, which talks to your hunger of intimacy and trusted companionship.
Yes.
And how it actually, just like food and nutrients affect our physical development, this hunger, neglect, affects our brain development in a very, very profound way. So, you know, it's not just enough to actually get the comfort and the and nutrition, but this hunger for companionship, of the hunger for being in relation with the other. It was fascinating. It's really, really amazing. I love how when you step back and you look at these, you know, you can see it, how they are present from an early age, right, all the way from when they're born, and how so much of even what I see in organizations, you know, one of the top drivers for employee attrition is they feel that they are not valued, hunger for acknowledgement, and they don't feel included. Belonging.
Exactly, exactly.
And acknowledgement shows up, one of the biggest drivers of attrition.
Yes.
Trusted. Trust is, you know, we address this in our model on Pearl on psychological safety and trust. If you don't feel you have the trust, you don't get the best outcomes, you don't flourish as an organization.
Exactly.
You know, food and comfort, I'll tie it to this notion of, you know, many companies don't actually poll this for their employees. And I think we're moving more and more towards polling it, which is to say, are your people facing any financial hardships that are going to get in the way of food and comfort? If they are, unless you move to alleviate and support, you're not going to get the best, because they are fundamentally, you know, they're struggling.
Definitely.
Same is for information. Are you helping them learning, grow, and develop? Another key attribute in work well-being that shows up. If people aren't growing and developing and atrophying, that hunger is going to make them leave because they look for that somewhere else.
Ashish, you have this grasped to the fullest.
I love these. I mean, they show up organizationally, and I'm amazed at how you tied it to from. These are from the point we are born.
And you know that when I was doing these, I wasn't trying to find a way to measure happiness at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was not finding a way to measure. I was just fascinated by my five sources of human hope and the five human, inborn human hungers. When I was doing this, Seligman was studying something called learned helplessness.
Yes.
That's what he was learning. That's what he was researching. Learned helplessness. If you read his story, you will see.
Yep.
Around this time, that's what he was doing. Okay. Now, after he became the president of American Psychological Society, then his theme was positive psychology.
Yes.
And they then moved. Of course, people worked on this before him. The behaviorist, Carl Jung and B.F. Skinner, they expanded the role of psychologists just outside of the disease realm. And then existentialists like Kierkegaard and Paul Dale, Sartre, they worked on it too. Then came the grandfather of them all, who did the hierarchy of needs.
Maslow,
Abraham Maslow. Okay. In fact, in the hierarchy of need, food and comfort is the primary thing, as you remember.
Yes.
Okay. So, and that's what the babies actually ask for first.
Yep.
And that's the first episode of human happiness that we have for food and comfort.
Yeah. So, but then we look for more as we go up.
Yeah. So the point, Ashish, was that as I saw that happiness became the big deal, and I'm saying, wait a minute, lack of hope is what makes people commit suicide. So is hope related to happiness?
Yes.
If Aristotle says that happiness is what life is all about. So I decided now to find out whether hope is the same thing as happiness, or are they different? Can you have one without the other?
Yeah, and what did you find?
So, I went back and did a survey, international survey, asking people, what is it that makes you happy? Give me event, situation, or an occurrence in your life that made you real happy. I just asked for three from as many people. This was done in Africa, in Nigeria, Ghana, particularly in the Caribbean, in North America, in Canada, and the US and Jamaica, and some in Kenya. When I put all of this together, there came to be five triggers of happiness.
Okay.
Five triggers of happiness.
I love they come in fives. Okay. Five triggers of happiness.
And this was just all coincidental. Five, and they are this: achievements and accomplishments. That was one category. Advancement in human connection and connectedness. Whether you reconcile with an estranged brother or sister, or you remarry, or you get an engagement ring, or make up with your friend or find an old friend that you've lost several years ago. Any advancement in human connection and connectedness. Or you have a new grandchild or a new baby.
Yep.
Okay. Then the third one was increase in income and personal comfort. Possession, material possession. And yes, that gives you happiness.
Yep.
If you get a pay raise, it gives you happiness. All right. Then the fourth was new knowledge and skill. I mean, you look at a baby, a four-year-old, three and a half or four-year-old, who conquered that two-wheel vehicle called a bicycle and now can ride without the training wheels. Or the high school kid who got his license. Or a very well-known man by the name Ashish who learned to fly a plane. These are new knowledge. Even when you find a new word, a meaning of a new word, new knowledge and new skill gives you happiness.
Yeah.
When you pass an exam, you have a perfect score in the SAT, all right?
And then what's the fifth? Yeah.
And the fifth is a pleasant spiritual experience. Either a baptism, confirmation, for those who are Catholics, first communion, or for those who are Muslim, if you go to become
Mecca.
An Al-Hajji,
yeah.
And you go to the
Hajj, yeah.
I had a nurse that I worked with. Her name was Virginia. One year she went to Israel with 25 friends of ours. And the pastor that went with them baptized all of them in River Jordan. And when she came back, she was like a different person. She felt that her salvation is certain after being baptized in the biblical water.
So, Alphonsus, just keeping an eye on time, right?
Yes.
As we wrap up, what would be three or four tips that you would offer to our listeners on actions that they can take?
All right.
From your book.
Okay.
And obviously, we'll have details on your book on our podcast and when we publish it so that people know how to get a hold of it. But what are some three to four tips from you that anybody can take wherever they are to
All
be
right.
happier?
Okay. Let me just go ahead and tell you that. Because when I put these three together, the five sources of human hope, the five inborn human hungers, and the five triggers of happiness, the relationship was so striking. How the five sources of human hope were directly related to the five triggers of happiness. And just the opposite happened with the inborn hungers. The five inborn hungers were just the opposite.
Yes.
And the five inborn hungers were like the other side of the coin for the five sources. So in trying to explain all of this, I could only find a good explanation for it in a simple mathematical equation of hope over hunger equals happiness. And that's what you just calculated.
Yep.
We calculated your hope and we divided by your hunger and we find your happiness index. So for anybody trying to go ahead, when I teach coaches, happiness coaches, what you have to do is increasing the hope of your client and decreasing the hunger to get the happiness. That is the simple. I wasn't in here looking for a way to measure happiness. I was just doing research, but the equation came to me. The equation found me. Okay, so this is it. And going to the literature, it was corroborated by every article I could find.
Well, I think what I love is it's, I'm friends on my 675th book at this point in the last 7 years. And this shows up. These show up in all the positive psychology research. It shows up in neuroscience. This shows up in philosophy, right? This shows up in spiritual traditions. But I love what you've just created, Alphonsus, right? Just to kind of articulate. So simple. I'll tell you three things that strike me. One, you're focusing on both sides of the coin. You're not just focusing on how to be more hopeful. We have to address hungers too, right? It's both sides of the coin, heads and tails. And I love it. What you're saying is, look, if you want to be happier, connect to your strengths and use them more. So increase your intrinsic assets. Build relationships in community. Want what you have rather than, go after I need more, more, and more. Invest in curiosity and education and cultivate spiritual practices as a way to increase hope while at the same time focusing on addressing your hungers. And if we do that, find which of those are absent in our lives and we focus on that, together, they will help us be happier.
And do you know the last thing that I really want to say is this. We all want to be happier. We all want to be happier. And countries now are trying to use as a barometer for a country how happy the citizens are.
Yes.
But there's no way to measure happiness. This is the first time you can quantify happiness backed by the literature. The World Happiness Report is just released now. Yeah. The one for 2024.
Yes.
March 20th. It was just released, as you know.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The same thing they are doing. They put Finland as number one, Denmark number two, Iceland number three, Israel number four, and Netherlands number five, and on and on and on. But you know how they are finding out? They just ask 1,000 people in each country, how satisfied with your life are you? From 0 to 10. And some will put 7, some will put 3, some will put... And when you look at it, what they are doing is so simplistic.
So yeah, well, I think they look at two, right, Alphonsus? They look at how satisfied are you today? And do you hope that where will you be on that ladder in the future?
They don't ask that. They don't ask that. They just ask, how satisfied are you? They want you to imagine what the best possible life is and the worst possible life is. And then you can choose anywhere from 0. And it's called the country ladder. The country ladder. Okay. So the lowest rung of the ladder will be 0. The top rung of the ladder will be 10. But you know, it's very seriously flawed because some people with Eastern culture, it is ingrained in them that when you are self-assessing yourself, be modest. So their answer is going to be 5 or 6. In the West, it's not unusual for people to be boastful when they are self-assessing themselves. And they can use 9, 10. And there are people, citizens, who see this as a patriotic question. And to favor their country, to show love for their country, they put a 9 or 10. And there are some who will see it as a chance to make a political statement about their bad government. And then they will put a 3 or 4. So they are not measuring happiness. They are measuring how people feel about their country. Happiness is an individual thing. What you face every day. So your positive emotions and your negative emotion, the ratio. When we did your hope score, we are measuring the sources of your positive emotions. And your hunger is the sources of your negative emotion. So your 48 over 11, we were finding the ratio between your positive emotions and your negative emotions. And it is 4.363. That's what this is about.
I love it. Well, this was such a pleasure to have you, Alphonsus, with us. Thank you for the beautiful work you are continuing to do. We need a lot more happiness coaches who are helping others. One, become aware of where they are. Second, you know, implement and support people in living their best lives, happier lives, increasing hope in the world, and helping them solve for their hungers. Thank you, my dear friend. It was lovely to have you. And I'm so wishing you the best for the launch of your book and the amazing work you're doing.
Thank you so very much.
That wraps up another episode of the Happiness Squad podcast. We hope you found the insights actionable to enhance your journey towards happiness and fill your life with more joy, health, love, and meaning. Please consider leaving us a review and share the podcast with anyone in your professional or personal life who you feel will benefit from some of these very insights. It's a really simple way to extend support and spread positivity. Take care and remember, happiness is a choice that's available to you moment to moment in the here and now. Take care and see you next week.